Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Let's do it. But first, before we really dive into this week of wrestling, we need to take care of a little bit of house cleaning here.
Okay.
It's really cold in this room right here. So I need to come up with a topic that gets Joel worked up so he starts moving around and creates some heat here. So let me tell everyone about the amazing movie that is Sasha's Party. Something that I know Joel hates. And Joel, go.
Sausage Party is the Jinder Mahal promo of movies.
You know what? Still too good. too good for Sausage Party. Sausage Party is the brand split draft promo of Kalisto with the whole lucha thing. Yeah.
That is oddly specific.
But it works.
Okay. Is it?
It's a good It's a good comparison of how bad the movie is.
There are worse things.
There are worse things, like Nerdland is like the We're Live Pal moment where was it Psycho Sid just completely forgot they were live. He's like, let's do it again.
Okay. If Nerdland is the We're Live, then Sausage Party is the Katie Vick segment.
Maybe we got those backwards. Maybe Nerdland is Katie Vick.
No.
Nerdland was pretty awful.
Yeah, but Sausage Party was worse.
I know. Okay, so just catch everybody up here. On our blog, Irrelevant But Awesome, we have been doing a movie of the week on Netflix the entire year. And Joel picked a movie called Nerdland, based primarily on the voice actors and everyone tied to it. And it's a great list of names, like Patton Oswalt. And I would have done the same thing.
It's not really a list. That's just a name.
I couldn't remember everyone in that movie because I tried to block most of that movie out of my mind. Okay. So that movie ended up being a hot pile of garbage. And then later on in the year, as a point of retaliation, I picked Sausage Party, and Joel has been trying to tell everyone that Sausage Party is by far the worst movie we've watched.
Okay.
Whereas we've got myself, Joel, and two other people who have been reviewing movies, and three of us agree that Nerdland was the worst.
It's not so much that Sausage Party was worse. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, nobody had seen Nerdland, so let's try this out. Chris had seen Sausage Party already and then intentionally inflicted it on the rest of us. So it's not so much that Sausage Party is worse, but Chris is worse.
To be fair, again, it was a point of retaliation. And B, I was watching it with a large group of people and pretty intoxicated before starting the movie itself. So my memory of it was way better than how good that movie actually was.
Point is, you're a worse person than me. I think that's
I didn't think that's what we were arguing. I thought we were arguing which movie was worse. I'll agree.
You're the Nerdland of people. If I'm the Sausage Party of people.
Okay. Too far. How dare you? And I will expect a text apology within the next 24 hours.
If you haven't picked up on it by now, there's not a lot that happened
there
in
really
wrestling this week.
There's okay, not.
Is it?
Which is funny because I feel like that was the theme of our podcast last week.
Is it me? Or did they forget how to not have a pay-per-view every other week?
Yeah, I think they have.
Like, I was just kind of going through, like, this week trying to think about, like, what we're going to talk about. I'm just like,
It feels like Raw is having a championship match, like, every week now.
Yeah. And it's not even so much, like, this wasn't a terrible episode of Raw this week.
It wasn't a memorable episode
last week.
And SmackDown, honestly, was kind of dog crap.
But and so it's like, am I, you know, and I was sitting there, I was like, am I a busier person these days? Mm-hmm. And it's easier to justify, you know, mm-hmm. missing a week or watching it and fast forward. Is it because I'm watching it by myself, whereas we used to watch it
as a
group, and it was like an event and a thing that we did, and mm-hmm. now this is the thing that we do as the podcast.
Yeah.
We watch separately and then
right.
come together with it. So I'm sitting there, I'm like trying to say, like, is it me or did they, do they not make the product like they used to? And I'm waxing nostalgic for like 2011.
I was about to say, that's not an era to be.
No, it's not.
To be thinking fondly of. Well, pre pipe bomb.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, like from like 2010 to like 2007. Yeah, you don't want to be, you don't want to act like those are the good old days.
No.
They were not.
They're not. Like, that's a, because, and that thing is like, I'm not.
Okay. Well, to be fair, this was just a bad week of live WWE television. NXT, we'll get into that.
We'll get into NXT.
But as far as the two flagship shows, not a great week for them. And I feel like, you know, just a few weeks ago, we had some interesting, compelling stuff on both shows, at least for SmackDown, on a regular basis. So, you know, just like a week or two, you know, doesn't, you know, necessarily indicate that they just don't know how to do this anymore. They just missed the mark somewhere, you know.
I think what is part of it is, so Royal Rumble used to be the kickoff to WrestleMania season. That was kind of its big thing, is this the kickoff for WrestleMania season. And I feel like WrestleMania season, much like Christmas, has continued to creep backwards.
Yeah.
And you can look at our predictions for Survivor Series and talking about like, oh, this is the Survivor Series, and this is how they're going to move this stuff towards WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You can even go as far back as SummerSlam, where we're talking about like, oh, they're going to do this, and this will return at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
This is
them getting back at us for complaining for so long that they don't do long-term booking.
Well, but it's not long-term booking.
Right.
It's only counts part of the time booking.
Right.
Which is different.
Because long-term booking is, you know, year-round, you know, eventually having some pay or some payoff at a pay-per-view at some point.
Right.
This is like, we've just got to worry about Mania. You know, it's just Mania focused.
Yeah, everything is, and Mania has become, and we've talked about how Mania has become for the casual fan. And now our new quote-unquote Mania is SummerSlam.
Right.
When, you know, oh, that's the thing that I was...
And Survivor Series is basically the All-Star game.
Sure.
Because it's just, you know, West Conference, East Conference, and now you guys fight.
I think we've milked our sports mixed metaphor about as far as it'll go.
I mean, a couple weeks ago we talked about which one was was Wrestling Christmas.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Now we're going to, you know, games.
But my point is that with WrestleMania being this big thing that is creeping and is less exciting because you kind of have this thing where you're like, all right, so Brock's going to take a slot and Triple H is going to take a slot and Cena's going to take a slot and Rock might take a slot. You always got to be wary about that. There's going to be a
sort of
slot.
Rock promo segment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you sit there and you're like, you're fast running out of like, where is, you know, Kevin Owens going to be? Where is AJ Styles going to be?
Yeah.
And you know that the answer is definitely not at the top of the card.
No.
Because, you know, Goldberg might want to come back.
Or they might want to put Roman back into it or something like that.
Yeah. Right? And that's part of it. Like we talked about last week, this exciting Shield thing feels very limited because it feels like, oh, this is going to be broken into once you get into the WrestleMania season.
Mm-hmm.
But you have these things where Brock, you know, was at Survivor Series, but then it's like, all right, see you at Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's going to hold the title till Rumble, then he's obviously going to hold the title till WrestleMania. So they've done it.
Sure, yeah.
They had the title, you know, basically not exist for a year. Those mad lads, they did.
And now they got everyone focusing on that Intercontinental Championship because it's Jon Roman.
Yeah.
So.
And so I think that it's not so much bad booking.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much they don't know how to do it without a pay-per-view every other week now. I think it's that nothing counts.
Right. It we're kind of like in wrestling purgatory right now where we just had a big, you know, a big branch of, you know, the pay-per-views that WWE cares about, mm-hmm. you know, with, you know, quote-unquote big stakes, even though it's been like 2 weeks and there, I don't really see what the stakes were. And now it's basically just kind of killing time until Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Which means Raw's going to really drag because they're the ones that doesn't have a pay-per-view. You know, this month, so they don't really have anything to work towards except for the Raw anniversary show.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not until January.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, it's just a weird just middle ground that, you know, they don't really have anything to work towards. And maybe that's why Raw's putting on so many championship matches per week.
Maybe, mm-hmm. but it just, it, I don't know, it feels like a weird thing to complain about.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, I'm like, this all just feels so temporary. When, yeah. like, yeah, it's all always temporary. And, like, I know that. I know I can take a step back and it's not like, mm-hmm. oh, that guy won the championship. He'll be champion forever now. Right. That's how things are now. No. And I was like, I know this is all temporary. I know that we go in these cycles, but it feels temporary.
Yeah.
Roman has the Intercontinental title. Okay. That's
well,
just
he's
going
to carry it until, you know, they're ready to have him beat Brock.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like, oh, this guy's getting a feud. And you're like, oh, everything feels filler now.
Yeah.
And there's no weight and there's no consequences to anything.
Mm-hmm.
You see the blueprint so clearly. This Jason Jordan thing, you're like, oh, he's turning heel this week. You're like, all right. Yeah, like he was going to.
Yeah.
Like clockwork. Not quite like clockwork. A little like, you know.
Because they still technically haven't turned him yet.
Yeah.
But it feels like he's turned heel like for the last month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But like they announced it and you're like, cool. 3 weeks of that's mm-hmm. my boy and then a heel turn. Got it.
Yeah.
And I kind of go back and I'm like, all right, what's the last thing that meant something?
I mean, you're getting full on existential right now.
I know I am. I know I am. But okay, I watched the Kevin Owens 365 thing.
Yeah.
And watching that had this little bit of this like, oh yeah, he was champion.
Yeah.
He was champion for a while.
Yeah.
Like he was face of the company champion.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're like, what's he doing?
Yeah.
How are you champion that long? How are you carrying this new title? How are you, you know, on this new brand split for that long and push down to, you know, this...
Almost not even on Survivor
Series. His yeah. storyline is not being on things now.
Right. Yeah. And it's a storyline I don't really care about.
Yeah.
You know? And the worst thing about it is you've got two of SmackDown's supposedly top faces who are now facing off against them at Clash of Champions, but they really just feel like the byproduct of the whole storyline. Because obviously the storyline is Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Shane,
mm-hmm.
but somehow they've worked in Randy Orton now and now Nakamura for reasons that, like, because if any of the talking segments or anything, it's always, you know, KO, Sammy, Shane.
Mm-hmm.
Randy's basically the wrestling avatar for Shane, and Nakamura is just along for the ride.
Yeah.
And it's, again, like, it's one of those storylines that, yes, it is an interesting way to kind of help SmackDown have some sort of storyline to get them through the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But even that storyline is starting to feel like it's treading water.
Yeah.
You know? Especially because you got like 2 weeks in a row of Shane opening up SmackDown and, you know, just more and more of this stuff. And I still have no idea what in the world they're doing with Daniel Bryan because he's involved and he was kind of like, you know, your mom says no, let me go ask dad, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And Daniel Bryan's like, yeah, no, I'm going to go along with it, but I don't feel great about it. Like that kind of sort of thing. Yeah. Like, man, they made a big deal about Kevin Owens being handcuffed to the ring rope.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt like they were arguing about it for, like, half the episode. And I'm just ready, like, just get over with. Like, just come on, you know.
But, so, again, when's the last time anything meant anything? Because I'm going back to, like, AJ Styles beat up John Cena thing.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh, that is a statement. This is a, you know, he is here. He is here to play with the big guys. He did a good job.
Yeah.
He is a number one contender. Oh. He is a top tier guy.
Yeah. I mean, changing championships right before Survivor Series, I felt like that was pretty, that meant something. For AJ. Because again, like, that was WWE recognizing that, oh, we need to have a main event or you know, a championship match that's going to mean something.
Uh-huh.
So we need to take out Jinder Mahal and put in somebody who means something. And that acknowledgement is, you know, is pretty monumental.
Yeah.
You know, especially for a guy who spent so many years outside of WWE in direct competition with WWE. Yeah.
Well, and you know. I mean, you can point to a lot of, like, he won on SmackDown. When's the last time that title's been switched hands on SmackDown?
Right.
In the UK. When's the last time the title switched hands in the UK?
Precisely, yeah.
Like, so, yeah.
There's a lot of factors that really felt like that match meant something.
Yeah, that felt genuinely monumental.
Yes.
That's the word. And, again, none of this has been bad. We're not watching bad wrestling.
No.
We have stacked, you know, rosters on both shows.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, good matches, good live TV matches, fairly consistently. Survivor Series was a great card.
It was a good weekend, yeah.
I mean, and so, like, in that past handful of months, you have is when you've had two pay-per-views, I think, that are easy contenders for pay-per-view of the year.
Yeah.
Both of them, quality-wise, far outstripping WrestleMania, which should, again, I'm sure I've made this argument on the podcast before, WrestleMania should always be your pay-per-view of the year.
Right. It should.
When that doesn't happen,
no.
You screwed up.
Right. And it hasn't happened since WrestleMania 30.
Yeah.
At least not for us, man. Oh, we gotta start thinking about classies.
Yeah, classies are soon.
Oof. I know we have this conversation every year, but do we like do it in the first podcast of the next year?
We do it the next year.
Okay.
Because we always give the opportunity for a December 31st surprise network show.
Right. Yeah.
To come in and win it.
It won't, but
no.
Okay. That's fair. Man. Okay, so I know this a little ahead of time. But who is under radar as far as who you think will win the Royal Rumble?
I don't know.
I think it's more likely that a Raw guy is going to win it this year, just because SmackDown won it last year with Randy. And so that makes you think that Roman's going to win, but surely WWE wouldn't try to pull that again, especially when it's in Philadelphia again.
I don't think Roman will win.
Right.
I think, and assuming that they're going with the Roman and Brock thing, I think they're going to tread lightly.
Yeah.
And I think it's the kind of thing is like, if you can get Roman to the main event without stepping on too many landmines, the casual cheers will carry him over to a babyface victory.
Because that's what they try to do in Dallas, you know, with having Triple H win instead, the Royal Rumble. And have Triple H be the champion going in too. And also help that they decided to take Roman off TV for a month.
Yep.
You know, for a deviated septum surgery, but they made it look like he had a broken nose or whatever. Very much a procedure they could have done any time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
They picked that period of time because of the reaction he was getting. They were thinking that would help, and it didn't.
Yeah.
It also didn't help that, like, the fans had been standing there for, like, 8 hours, and basically drew it out an extra hour than advertised.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what more they can do shenanigans-wise to make, you know, the fans get behind Roman Reigns. Granted, there are good ways that they could organically try and do it if they book him correctly, but we know that that's not going to happen. But as far as, like, some people that I feel like are likely to win, you know, if they're going to keep Roman in the championship picture, and so it kind of makes you think it's not going to be a Raw guy, then makes you look at SmackDown, and I'm thinking guys like, you know, people that have, maybe it's just me being wishful, but I'm thinking maybe Nakamura. Okay. There was another SmackDown guy I was thinking of, and I'm completely blanking. And on the Raw side, I could see like Braun Strowman. Mm-hmm. You know, Braun, if anybody deserves it as far as like growth and progression over the year and fans actually getting behind somebody over the course of the year, Braun Strowman, like, crown him, like, he's your guy.
Yep.
But part of me is kind of scared that they're going to do what they did last year with Braun. Like, they built him really well, like, in a short period of time, and then forgot about him in right Mad Mania, and he was just a guy that was at the Andre.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. There's a few, like, obviously there's a few directions they can go with it.
I mean, you go back to right before the brand split ended the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
And they had several years where the person would win the Royal Rumble and then be like,
you don't know which one they were going to go for.
That was what it was supposed to be. It's like, oh, they could go for either one. And then they always went for the SmackDown one.
If they're on SmackDown.
Well, because the Raw had like a storyline.
Oh, right. Yeah, I got what you're saying. Yeah.
Like, we think about like when Del Rio and Edge.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Won, and they.
And Sheamus.
Yeah.
Yeah, all went for the SmackDown title.
And that's because they had plot and story and, you know, motivation behind the WWE title. But for the heavyweight, they're just like, oh, the Rumble guy will always. We'll go for that one then.
Right. I would like to see some sort of element where the winner of the Rumble can pick, you know?
I would like to see that.
Yeah. I feel like that would add an extra level of intrigue into it all.
And for this time around, I feel like the WWE title is still prestigious enough that, you know, it won't feel like they're clearly going for the inferior title when they have a title shot at the real title. Like it did, you know, when it was like WWE was on Raw and Heavyweight was on SmackDown. Yeah. And you're like, all right, there's a better title and you're going for the second tier one.
Right.
Although it's interesting, speaking of the Kevin Owens documentary, Kevin Owens kept calling the Universal title the WWE title.
Yeah.
And I was like,
Because, again, like it was, at the time of recording it was still really new, you know? Hey, and I guess people were still trying to get their minds wrapped around this Universal thing.
Well, I mean, that's also, like, what it was. Like, oh, this is the only one on Raw, so that's the one that counts now.
Right.
And it's like, oh, they'll get them switched at some point.
Sure. I if they had, like, monumentally failed to get the Universal title over, they would have switched it, you know, and just changed the strap to where it's blue and then, you know, have at it.
The WWE title is the one with the history and the legacy.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, and it's a very good chance it'll be at the 25th anniversary of Raw.
Yeah.
So it'll be somewhere around there, or I'm surprised that they had Jinder Mahal win it and to be the 50th person on SmackDown. That feels like that would have been a thing that moved back over to Raw, was that
for something like that
landmark?
Yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting if they had done something where, you know, the winner can pick whichever, and that winner of the Rumble, if they get that championship, they can take it back to whatever show that they're on.
Yeah,
you know? And then you got a little bit of interesting, you know, interconnectivity there. Anyhow, then they would have to come up with a way of how they get it back, or how do they get another championship over to the other show, or whatever. Just add some little extra twist to it.
Yeah.
Did want to touch on this. There was a report, I want to say yesterday, I believe. They're talking about, you know, Sheamus is kind of been rehabbing an injury. Turns out, according to the report, it's spinal stenosis.
That sucks.
Yes, it really sucks for him because that's, you know, that's the injury that that Edge had to retire from. I believe Sting ended up, that's what Sting ended up having before he retired. And it's also, you know, I don't think it was caught, but I forget the guy's name, the guy who passed away in Mexico last year. It was from spinal stenosis. So it's very serious, and it makes me nervous that he's still continuing. Maybe they're just trying to find a good stop point for him or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe it is a minor version of it. I don't know.
I don't know enough about spinal stenosis.
No, me neither.
Like, oh, this is just a baby spinal stenosis.
All I know is this makes me nervous every time I watch Sheamus wrestle from now on.
Yes.
And it's a good indicator that, you know, maybe, you know, his retirement is in the very near horizon.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I also forgot, he's 40.
Yeah.
Dude does not look that old. Anyway, I know our show's history. And it's not... Our show's history has not fared well for Sheamus. As far as our reaction to him, how we feel about him. When the day comes that Sheamus is no longer in the ring,
mm-hmm.
will you feel bad about that? Like, will you miss Sheamus, essentially? Will you go back and remember him fondly?
First of all, nobody should retire by injury.
No, absolutely not.
Obviously, that sucks.
No matter who you are in this business, yeah.
Yes. And second of all, if you are terrible, if I hate you, at least part of it is your booking.
Sure.
It's not like
you hate the guy personally.
Well, not that I hate the guy personally, but I am of the belief that if you got to WWE, if you got on their radar,
mm-hmm.
there is a good chance you have some level of talent in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And people complain about Five Moves of Doom all the time. And various, like, this is why John Cena is terrible in the ring. But John Cena knows how to put on a good match and tell a good story through actions instead of words.
Right.
Knows how to, the rise and fall. He's good in the ring.
Yeah.
Hogan was the same way.
Yeah.
He had his four moves, but he knew how to tell the story and get the crowd reaction.
Yeah, he knew how to work
the
crowd.
Especially for the time period.
Sure.
I mean, his actions wouldn't work today, but they worked perfectly for the time period, and that's why
he was the right guy for that time. Yeah.
So, if you have gotten to WWE, if you've gotten on their radar, you've been able to do that some way, somehow, somewhere.
Yeah, you had done something right.
So, if I hate you, if I hate your character, that is at least some level the booking fault, creative's fault, which is why I try to... on this podcast, when I complain about things, I try to say, I don't like this guy's booking.
Right.
This character, this wrestler needs to be booked differently.
Yeah.
And that is a fundamental issue. Now, when we came to Sheamus,
yeah,
I did write an article, and that's what you're referring to. I wrote an article called Why I Hate Sheamus.
Yes.
Which...
And this was like almost at the origin of our podcast. Like, this was very much the beginning.
Like,
and to be fair, so also to you, you did ask me at some point, what do they do to make Sheamus more interesting as a character? And I said, kill him. And then have like a, you know, Weekend at Bernie's type situation. So both of our history isn't great.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, so I can't.
From a PC,
I can't exactly backtrack and be like, I always loved him. He had some rough patches, but...
And to be honest with you, we really only like him because in such close proximity to Cesaro.
So I will still
mm-hmm.
say, if you want to dig that article up, it still exists on the internet. I will say that I stand by what was in there. What Sheamus was doing at the time was bad. Sheamus, the wrestler, Sheamus the person, was doing a bad job of attempting to put on the character that they were asking him to do.
Yeah.
And while that is still, on some level, booking's failure for giving him his character, mm-hmm. that there was also definite Sheamus failure for doing this. If you will dig further back, I also wrote an article, then this was like maybe my third No Chance article ever.
Yeah, because we were writing for a good year before we started the podcast.
I wrote an article complaining about poor booking of Sheamus.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first time. I was like, that wasn't just like a recap. Here's what happened this week. Here's what I think about it. It was the first like, hey, let's really delve into... what's going on here?
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, and so this was, you know, so far back enough that was relatively early in Sheamus's career.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taking issue with, they dumped all of this stock into Sheamus, moved him from Goldberg jobber to champion in the 6 month span.
Yeah.
Faced John Cena, faced Triple H at WrestleMania. And after that, had this like kathump, kathump, kathump spiral.
Yeah.
For years. And I was just talking about like, there's so much wasted stock.
Yeah.
Here. You know, having him be the one that beat Cena during this reign, having him be the one that took out Triple H, because Triple H, if you'll remember, was going off to film Chaperone at the time.
Right.
And Sheamus was the one that faced him at WrestleMania and then beat him up the next night.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you have all this stock you've put into this guy and you've wasted it. And you shouldn't do that because Sheamus has genuine talent. And Sheamus can be this, you know, monster character that you've talked about him being.
Yeah.
He can be this danger in the ring. So I will say, like, well, yeah, there's that I Hate Sheamus article.
Sure.
And it's got my name on it.
Yeah.
I do also want to say, like, I've not been down on Sheamus since day one.
Yeah.
There was a big, long time span there. Mm-hmm. Where Sheamus was not working.
Yeah.
Sheamus was not clicking with the material. Sheamus was not clicking with anybody in the ring. Sheamus was not clicking with himself as a character.
Yeah.
And
the more that continued, the more it seemed like WWE was, like, kept putting him in high-profile situations.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when they turned him face, they tried to get him to be the one, like, the face that's carrying SmackDown at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't working. And again, like a 6 month feud with Del Rio didn't help. I still hate that.
Yeah. I will say it is a shame because Sheamus is finding a good spot for himself.
Yeah.
While we talk about like, oh, it's just proximity to Cesaro, it really.
But at the same time, he found a groove.
It really isn't. Like, if Sheamus had a singles match right now, I'd be on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's part of this is just when people complain about like wrestling is such cartoonish broad strokes, you know, stuff. And you're like, yeah, it is. But at the same time, this character of Sheamus is so much basically the exact same garbage character he was playing for all these years. But there's just like subtle nuances and tweaks and attitudes toward slightly different things. I mean, Sheamus has never been repackaged. He's not been like, oh, I'm this kind of character now. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking like, you know, Marine Cena to Hustle Loyalty, Respect Cena, or, you know, Biker Taker to Demon, you know, Taker or to, you know, these characters who keep the same name but definitely have a legit repackaging. Sheamus has never had that.
Yeah.
Sheamus has
changed
essentially
his look, but that's really it.
Right, but he's played the same character, same motivations, kind of thing. And you look through things like this, you know, Fast Rise, where he was face SmackDown.
Yeah.
He had this like gimme someone to fight thing going for a little bit. Even through like League of Nations.
Yeah.
When that was a thing for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And he's hit it. He's found the stride. And it was working with Cesaro, I think.
Yeah.
But he has built a character that is true to the character he's been building for all these years and working. And it does feel a little bit like, you know, this like 7 years are finally starting to pay off.
Yeah.
Both for him and for us, the audience.
Yeah.
So if this is it, man, that sucks.
Sure. I feel like he's found a style now that suits him. And, you know, we've always heard that, you know, Sheamus likes working pretty snug. He likes working pretty stiff, you know. And he came in at a time where, you know, guys didn't really do that in WWE, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't really become more of a thing until lately when you get more and more independent guys getting signed by WWE. Had he debuted around this time and WWE didn't, like, you know, push them down everybody's throat. I feel like we would have had a much different feeling about him. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a combination of it where, you know, he was supposed to be the next guy, or, you know, or around that area. Like, you know, if not the guy, then the next tier down. And it was, again, it was one of those things where WWE was just forcing it, and it just didn't click, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, at least, you know, with Ryback, when they, you know, there was like a 4 or 5 month period of time where the crowd was so behind him, and then obviously, you know, WWE's booking just didn't do the guy any favors. You know, I don't remember a time when Sheamus was getting that push where the crowd was completely behind him, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe like a return pop or something like that once in a while. But other than that, not really. I mean, I remember I was okay with him winning the Rumble, you know, mostly just because, you know, I thought it was impressive that he and Jericho were in the Rumble for so long and then basically had like a 12-16 minute match between just the two of them. Mm-hmm. And you don't really see that. Usually when it comes down to the final two in Rumble, the match is about to end,
right?
But they just kept going.
They kept going. That was a very impressive thing, yeah. Especially because that was like that was a Jericho's mm-hmm. foregone conclusion to win.
Yeah, and also, you know, he kind of got a lot of residual hate from the WrestleMania 28 against Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. I forget how many 16-second match or whatever.
The 18-second bro kick.
He got a lot of hate for that, which again, that's not his decision. He's just doing what his boss told him to do.
Right.
You know, so I don't know if that was all fair or anything, but again, it felt like, you know, here's WWE using their guy to squash the indie darling, mm-hmm. you know.
I think a lot of what works now is in the tag team scene.
Yeah.
We talk about, like, you know, it's the proximity to Cesaro, and Cesaro helps, but I think if he had real time to work and develop a tag team with anybody.
Because yeah. That was the thing. I don't think Sheamus really had any, like, other than, you know, the obvious, like, random pairing on Raw or anything, he never really had a tag team
Mm-mm.
in League of Nations for, like, a hot minute, but that's it.
Yeah. But you know? There were, I'm going to say four people. I don't remember, honestly. I'm going to say four people in League of Nations,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't long enough for them to form, like, oh, this is the tag team.
Right. Like, I feel like they missed out on a lot of years of him being a good tag team wrestler, you mm-hmm. know. A little bit better than Eric Rowan, but not by much. Personality-wise, he's got a little bit more than Rowan.
Yeah.
Do you think, just jumping to a new topic here, do you think that we would get a women's Royal Rumble match?
This year or someday?
This year. Someday, I feel like they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And I feel like if they ever had a chance to do it, this... And again, they just introduced 2-3 women factions,
mm-hmm.
you know? And you could always have, you know, like, one-offs with, like, NXT women, or bring back some girls from the Mae Young Classic, or have, like, a surprise return just for that one night. Like, just like we're... And you don't have to have a 30-woman Rumble. You can have, like, a 15-20...
I think they should.
Yeah. It'll be a good way to fill out the card a little bit more.
Yeah. I feel like there's 30. I mean, that they can pull, especially if they...
If they have some surprises and they pull from the Mae Young.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Trish... And a lot of the Mae Young women are signed. They yeah. just haven't... They're just not on TV as much.
I mean, there were, 32 of them?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, there's... You know, you pull a couple of the Mae Young women, mm-hmm. you put your entire main roster from both
Raw and SmackDown.
You do 3 surprise call ups from NXT. Mm-hmm. You get Trish or Lita to
come just do a quick thing and mm-hmm. yeah. And especially with, like, you know, you've got so many, like, even now, like I'm struggling to remember her WWE name. AJ Lee's best friend.
Caitlin.
I kept wanting to say Celeste just because I'm on all of her social media because I'm a perv. Even she's been working out in a ring lately. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, they're going to bring her back? And I'm thinking, like, I don't know if they really would have a spot for her
yeah.
on a regular basis. But bringing her back for like a Royal Rumble thing wouldn't make a lot of sense. And again, it would take up another spot on the match.
Mm-hmm. I don't see any good reason not to.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you could easily pull out a hour long match for the mm-hmm. women.
Yep.
If you still want to be like, you know, this is a subpar thing to the real Royal Rumble, then mm-hmm. make it another 40-man Rumble.
Sure.
They're
all about making their big flagship shows longer anyway.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, like this would be a way that they could fill out the card. Because it always feels like the Royal Rumble is kind of a struggle to get the non-Rumble match card put together, you know?
Yeah, and that's part of it is... You don't care yeah. about the non-Rumble stuff.
No.
Because the championship match is always some, like, weird, like, oh, this guy will put on a good match, but mm-hmm. there's, you know.
The only exception being Punk and Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, the only time in recent memory where I can think of the championship match happening after the Rumble match. Right. But, again, it's the Rock.
And honestly, like, again, to go back to the WrestleMania season creep.
Yeah.
Part of that is because whoever is, you know, has the title is already starting to feud with somebody, so you can't have them switch the title out now.
Right, yeah.
Like, those title feuds have already started
yeah.
pre the Rumble. And that was also true with the Rock thing.
Yeah.
Like, twice in a lifetime, feud was starting in November and December.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, this is going to...
So when Cena won that Royal Rumble, we knew what was... I mean, we kind of figured what was happening in the main event anyway.
Yeah.
But having Cena win...
you also don't have, you know, The Rock announce he's going to challenge at this show and then not win.
Right, of course. So, I don't know. It would... Again, it would be a good way to fill out the card. And for the first time in a while, they've got something close to that roster size.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That they can pull that off feasibly and believably and not have it feel like they're scraping for names to put in there.
Yeah.
You know. So, NXT.
Yes.
Week one of my challenge for you to watch NXT for this whole entire month.
For the rest of the year.
For the rest of the year. I know you did because you were finishing watching it when I showed up.
Yes.
What did you think about this week's?
It's all right. No, it's good.
Fair enough. I can't remember if they had set it on NXT because they, I knew because I watched it live while I was at work on Wednesday, and they were trying to make it look like, oh, who's gonna be Ono's opponent for mm-hmm. his qualifier match for the number one contendership or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I found out today that was because that spot was supposed to be Velveteen Dream.
Yeah, they said it on there.
They did say it on the show.
It was supposed to be Velveteen Dream.
That I completely missed it. Okay. Yeah, so I'm guessing the injury is legit.
Or at least
legit enough to where he missed that series of tapings.
Yeah.
Which is fine, you know, whatever, just bring him back because like this is like I think a lot of us don't want to see War Games to be his peak.
Yeah.
You know, like jumping off point.
I'll be totally honest, like, mm-hmm. they talked about that, and I'm like, Velveteen Dream, that was War Games, and he did all this War Games, excited, ready mm-hmm. to move forward. And then, not the segment after that, but the segment, like, two after that was the winners of War Games, and we're talking about War Games, but they didn't say that they were the winners right away. They talked about surviving War Games.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, I was like, did they win? I think they won. Did they win?
Yeah.
They wouldn't be on here if they didn't win, but I don't remember them winning.
Yeah.
So, like, there was just so much... War Games is not the most memorable part of War Games. It was Velveteen Dream.
I don't know. I rewatched War Games.
War Games is solid.
Yeah.
And War Games is carnage.
Yeah.
You know, but like Velveteen Dream absolutely.
It was the show stealer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're doing this thing on NXT, and we talk mm-hmm. about at the beginning of the show, like how to long term book, what long term booking is, mm-hmm. what it looks like. And how nothing matters. And on NXT, everything matters.
Yeah.
They did two matches this week. They will mm-hmm. do another match next week and another match the week after that. The winner of those four matches mm-hmm. spread over 3 weeks will then the following week have a fatal four-way
yeah.
match. And then they even went back and one of the seven they talked about when he was entering the ring, he won this slot in here,
At a live event.
At a live event, at a Battle Royale live event.
Trent Seven, yeah.
And I was watching, I was like, everything matters in this show.
The only thing that felt like it didn't really matter was Ruby Riott versus against Sonya Deville. Even though, even then, it was like, it was kind of payback for, Sonya Deville was the reason why Ruby Riott wasn't in the NXT Women's Championship match. Mm-hmm. So there was still some history there. It wasn't just like random pairing. It just was weird that they decided to do this while they both have been moved on to like the main roster.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, they I still have a lot of respect for them.
This taping took place before.
No. Because they did the tapings like three, four days after Survivor Series, which was like the a night or two after they both debuted.
Okay.
Yeah. But it, again, I know that they want to wrap up storylines, considering they never wrapped up any of Kevin Owens' storylines when he was in NXT. He still has like five NXT feuds. Now all the feuds that he's been involved with, they're all on the main roster now, except for Alex Riley.
I will say, so it was literally this episode where I was sitting there watching, I'm like, okay, I'm on board with Ruby Riott.
Yeah.
Like, I've been like...
Even with the two T's?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I can't stand it, but I understand.
I'm assuming it's a trademark
thing. Oh, sure. They can't trademark the word Riott, but they could trademark Riott with two T's. Yeah.
So it was like, I've been not against her or angry at her.
And honestly, she hasn't really done enough on NXT to really... garner, you know, a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people that like her look or like her attitude or whatever. I always thought she moved really well in the ring. That's why I was kind of in the pro column for her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just didn't feel
It was a lot of like watching. I was like, I'm gonna be in the pro column. I just haven't like It's like when you haven't fully.
But you're not like fully gung-ho.
But you know you're going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt the same way.
Where you like, you're like, I know I'm gonna buy that thing. I just gotta live with the knowledge I'm gonna buy with it before I actually buy it. And it was literally this match where I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm on board.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't really like Sonya Deville. Because again, like when they first brought her on, I saw the appeal. Like, oh, this is this badass former MMA girl, and you know she's a striker and she can do all these things, and now and that was fine. And then we saw Baszler, who is 10 times more legit than she is. And so now, like, Sonya Deville feels really watered down.
That's the problem, is she is billed as, you know, MMA.
Yeah.
And first of all, you were playing a dangerous game by using MMA as equivalent of hardcore and dangerous,
right?
When you're trying to like talk about comparisons and stuff,
yeah,
where you because you're like, oh, they're coming from the real thing,
right?
Now, isn't that scary?
You're right,
and you're like, oh, we're all pretending you're real, why aren't you working with us?
Right,
we're doing this for you,
right? And again, by comparison, you bring in someone like Baszler, who
and that's the thing, is like,
who looked legit dangerous compared to
you bring in Baszler,
Sonya.
Rousey is heavily rumored to be.
She's like right around the corner.
Yeah, showing up, and you're like, who is this also ran contender coming up? And you're like,
yeah.
So when multiple people show up right after you doing your gimmick better than you.
Yeah. Yep.
So she. And she's not bad, and it's not a bad gimmick. It's a.
No.
Again, dangerous game that you play, but. You probably have like 2 months to like really solidify it. So,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, Ken Shamrock was able to pull it off.
Yeah,
and it's, I don't know of much more people who have been able to
put a little more development into your character.
Yeah, besides just like I'm a former MMA fighter. I'm like, okay, well, what about your character? And you're just like, I'm a former MMA fighter. Like that. If that's the end of the sentence, then. You gotta give us something else, you know.
But also the main event match was
Cassie Sono versus Johnny Gargano.
Yeah, and Gargano's big return.
Yep.
Fantastic match.
Yeah.
Cassie Sono is just he's a good big dude.
Yeah.
And part of it is like he's not huge.
Right. He's tall and he's, you know, he obviously is a little bit more round. Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder like why in the world back in the day did WWE have him like be so skinny? You know, because then as soon as he went in the Indies, he gained all that weight, and he was heavier than he had ever been. You know, in his early Chris Hero stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and honestly, he uses it well in the ring.
So
it makes his impact, because a lot of it is striking stuff, a lot of the elbow stuff. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the fact that he's got that weight behind it, it makes it seem a little bit more impactful.
WWE's got a lot of big guys.
Yeah.
Especially when you have Big Cass, Big Show, Mark Henry, kind of like the big guys. But big does not immediately equal dangerous. And they act like it does.
Right.
But you have all these big, and Big Cass is the prime example right now, where it's like, he's big, and you're like, he's useless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's just, big doesn't necessarily mean intimidating. You think back, and the best example is, and just because it's the most well-known, is WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
With Hogan and Andre, and that was a match, and the way it was played up, where size matters.
Mm-hmm.
And Andre is so big, and it's a larger-than-life man fighting an absolute giant.
Yeah.
And his size and his weight was such a factor in that, and it felt like a factor in that match. And that happened in this match with Johnny Gargano. Like, this is, I mean,
there's also a pretty big, like, size difference. Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, Johnny Gargano is not a small dude.
No.
Like, he probably would dwarf me if we stood, you know, side by side.
Right.
But so he's a big guy, but he's fighting an absolute giant monster.
Right.
Which, again, Casitono is not the biggest dude.
Uh-uh. I mean,
he's big, but he's not the biggest dude. But
the striking ability
and he carries himself
right
in a way that his size and his weight is a factor.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, it does help when they brought him back. They immediately had him feuding with Hideo Itami. And again, they just laid into each other that entire feud. So that's your established, you know, like, here's your guy that's going to knock your lights out if you come across him. You know, and honestly, I don't see them moving Cassius Ohno beyond an NXT, and I'm okay with that. You know, like, having an established guy in NXT, it adds a little bit of credibility to it.
I think they're going to the point, and Triple H has flat out talked about wanting NXT to just be the third brand.
Right.
They're getting to the point, and I think they're closer than you might expect to the point where NXT will be the end for some people. That will be...
Yeah.
They need some top-tier guys. They need some final bosses. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys have played that role for a while.
Yeah. And like we thought Samoa Joe was going to be that role until they finally moved him up.
Yeah. And I think that you will have that sooner than later. You'll have the leaders of NXT. You will have the kingmakers, kind of thing. I think it will still be the rookie league being called the big leagues kind of feel for a good long while.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that you will start to get the guys that are NXT stars before anything else.
Sure. And I feel like you're going to have that feel to it unless they ever decide to do that thing where the local Florida shows are called something else, you know? But speaking of, like, as far as brand, because, you know, again, NXT is the third brand. They announced this week that 205 Live is going to have their own live events. Like, granted, they're, like, really small venues and everything, but that just feels weird to me. Like, who has the draw appeal to main event those shows, you know? And apparently Nia Jax is going to be with them. Like, apparently, like, in the future, there's going to be one of the live events is going to be, like, a championship match where she's going to be the special ref or something because has the hots for Enzo now. I don't know. Granted, again, that's... This is a good way to... I understand what they're doing. They're trying to establish Paige's faction as a dominant, overpowering force. And it's kind of hard to do that when you're up against Nia Jax because she could take all three of them out. So this is... I understand this is a way to kind of distance her from that for now.
Yeah.
But man, this makes very little sense. But the 205 Live thing, I don't understand who is buying tickets for that.
I mean, I get it in the sense that, like, if they announced tomorrow that 205 Live wasn't going to be in the area, uh-huh, and I could get tickets to it, yeah.
They would have to be some cheap tickets.
I mean, yeah, but, like, I would pay...
If I can get in there for $10.
I would pay the prices I would pay to see any indie show.
Okay, yeah.
And
about $10-$15, yeah.
And I feel like that's what WWE is scared of.
Mm-hmm.
And scared of might be too powerful of an emotion, but for the first time in a long time, there is alternative wrestling.
Right.
Where... And I know that indie has been around a long time and forever, but you had WCW, obviously, with this big, like, this or that, with that in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just WWE. And I was like, oh, you could watch Ring of Honor. And you're like, that's a lot of work.
Right, yeah.
Like, I got to find this. I got to, you know, get my 56 modem plugged in. I got to listen to that dial tone to try and order this DVD from this weird website that looks shady that I don't know if I want to give them my credit card number. And it costs like $40 a DVD.
Right.
And you're like, this isn't really what I'm looking for.
Right.
But it's so easy to watch independent wrestling right now.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, like, I wasn't talking with you about this, but I'll bring you into this conversation that I was having with another person the other day. Talking about... more and more people are cutting cords. There's no cable. Don't need to do cable. And so it's getting to the point where it is almost easier to watch the pay-per-views of wrestling
than it is to watch USA.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because, you know, we've got a friend who is just now getting into wrestling and can't always watch the weekly shows live.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's asking, like, well, on this network thing, can I go back and watch those episodes, like, later in the week? I was like, you can eventually,
yeah,
like, after, like, a month or so. And it's just one of the, like, I know this is something to do with their, you know, contract with Universal and everything. But I don't, they're going to have to work on, like, a quicker turnaround,
mm-hmm,
you know? Because I don't see why, like, A, USA is not going to replay Raw and SmackDown all that much, except, like, maybe, like, the 3-4 in the morning hours.
Yeah.
But beyond that, like, yeah, like, you should be able to make them available on the WWE network fairly quickly.
Well, part of the problem is as soon as you do that, you drop the appointment television. DVR-proof kind of feel that sports is theoretically supposed to have.
Right.
And, you know, complain about the if it's a sport or not, but... Wrestling is supposed to have that also, where, like,
where you're supposed to be on the edge of your seat and you don't want to, and you don't want anything spoiled on what's happening on Raw,
right?
Until you
and there's a lot of the culture that assumes that at 11:01 everything's fair game.
Yeah,
you don't have to say, like, oh, spoilers, have you seen it yet?
Yeah,
same thing with basketball. You don't have to be like, oh, have you seen who won the Super Bowl yet, or are you waiting to watch the Super Bowl?
Right.
No, you just say, hey, that out of one.
Yeah.
And you can do that theoretically with wrestling. And obviously that's a, you know, different people's different opinions, mileage may vary kind of thing. But it's easy to watch independent wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And not just Ring of Honor and New Japan, who also have a network now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chikara and these other big names.
Mm.
But, like... What culture? Just, and it's all up on YouTube, which is a thing that I have already.
Yeah,
because everybody, like, has it.
Or Mid-South, you know, that they do a weekly show now on YouTube,
mm-hmm,
you know.
And there are names there.
Yeah.
And they're not John Cena and Randy Orton, but, like...
But they're established within, you know, their community, within their,
mm-hmm,
their viewership. Yeah.
And they're starting to get established within... bigger communities, bigger names.
Sure.
You know, some of them are old WWE guys. Some of them are being able to, you know, I feel like the average wrestling fan knows the name of more unsigned wrestling stars than at any point in history.
Sure. Like, it's the whole reason behind Young Bucks and Bullet Club's, you know, notoriety right now is because all their stuff is so readily available. You mm-hmm. know, they've got their YouTube show, all their, you know, Ring of Honor. It's so much more readily available. Their New Japan stuff, all that stuff mixed together, it's right at their fingertips.
And well, you also have all these people who WWE has released, mm-hmm. and who once upon a time that just meant they went away,
yeah.
or they went to TNA.
Sure. Let me tell you one thing, because I know you. I was sitting here like wondering, like, why is he not bringing this point up? It's like, oh right, you weren't at Starrcade. There were so many Young Bucks and Bullet Club shirts,
mm-hmm.
like. I would say at least half of the people in the crowd were. It also helped that, you know, WrestleCade was the same weekend. So right. a lot of them just came from there and, like, literally were just wearing the shirts they just bought at WrestleCade.
Uh huh.
But yeah, it is insane how, like, just those guys in particular, again, with the help of guys like Cody Rhodes, where, you know, these WWE fans know and are very familiar yeah. with.
I mean, once upon a time, Cody Rhodes would have left. And then kind of disappeared. Maybe,
sure.
Maybe shown up on TNA with a different name.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you would have been like, oh, what's happening with that Cody Rhodes guy? And you'd look up and be like, oh, he's got a signing in Maryland
right.
this weekend. Okay. but now, I can go on any website trying to find WWE news.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, also, Cody Rhodes is doing this.
Right.
Harder to get WWE information and avoid anything than it is to just start absorbing this indie information.
Right. And again, like, also the onset of social media, like, all this stuff. And it's the reason why we talked about last week. This is the reason why this 10,000-seat show that Cody and Young Bucks want to do and want to fund is so feasible, and I really think they're going to do it.
Oh, I think so, too.
I think they're probably going to get sold out, you know, fairly, I don't want to say quickly, but, you know, obviously before that.
I don't think they'll be selling tickets at the door.
No, I don't either. Especially if they hit up a big market like Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, that's already a big wrestling town on top of, you know, some other tricks mm-hmm. that they might want to pull.
Well, I think they'll pull some strings, make this kind of be like, this is a one worth traveling for. All you guys who travel all over to watch WWE yeah. weekly shows.
The funny thing, because they have a joke on being the elite, where they're like, oh man, I love it when we go to our favorite Japanese restaurant, and it's TGI Fridays,
mm-hmm.
like always. And they go to TGI Fridays. If it's not TGI Friday, for TGI Fridays, it's Cracker Barrel. This past episode of Being the Elite, they go to TGI Fridays headquarters,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they like get a tour. They, you know, they have like their main chef that tries new things. They got to try these weird new creations that they're coming up with. And it comes out later like, oh, they were there because they want to talk about potential sponsorships for their 10,000-seat stadium. I'm like,
yeah.
WWE's big, but I couldn't see them getting a TGI Fridays, mm-hmm. you know? Maybe they might, but still. The fact that they're getting a large corporation to pay attention to them for this show, to even just have a meeting for it,
yeah,
you know, that would not have been possible 5 years ago.
So I say all this to say, I get, as absurd as it seems, I get the we're going to start doing house shows, touring shows of 205 Live.
Right.
Just because, like, I think they want more of the, you know, pie chart WWE slice to be bigger.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they have these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They have them under contract. Let's put them on the road. Let's put them in yeah. a ring. Let's try and sell some tickets for it.
Yeah, and honestly, like, it'll give them the opportunity to try new things and try more things, try to figure out exactly what's going to work on 205 Live these days.
Yeah.
So, honestly, like, stuff like that could only make their product better, especially when you get more guys who are getting experience of, like, being the main event of shows and closing out shows and what it takes to kind of do that on, you know, on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they can always pull from, like, NXT with, like, bigger names when they need help
oh, yeah.
selling tickets, or, you know, if they need to fill out the card with guys from the UK tournament, you know.
I think you'll start to get a lot more within WWE cross-brand promotional stuff.
Right. And stuff like that, honestly, will build some momentum for guys that don't normally get the crowd behind them.
Uh-huh.
You know. So I'm hopeful about it. It's just, I don't know. seems weird that they're doing it now. Like, I figured
it does, but
I know that this was part of their plan all along. Like, when Vince first announced this, eventually this was what he wanted to do. Like, he mentioned it, I think, in the press release. Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel like they had enough momentum to pull that off just yet. And then again, they're starting off really small.
Yeah.
But still.
Again, I think it's this is a weird time in wrestling. We are definitely looking at a transitional period of wrestling.
Feels like the market's flooded.
It does.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. All right, anything else this week?
Nope, that's it.
As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CR Attire. We live tweet wrestling shows and any other wrestling thoughts that we have.
Yep, and if you have any questions, any comments, anything you want us to bring up on the show, send that over to our email. That's classroomringattire@gmail.com.
We're also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast, get an episode every week. You could subscribe, or you could also write a review or give us a rating of
5 stars.
That kind of interaction really helps out the podcast.
And if you're listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We love to hear from you.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Easy way to follow myself. See what other kind of things we are working on.
Yep.
Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.